Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to WrestleChat Radio. Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of WrestleChat Radio's Raw Report. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York, and for the next hour, we will be discussing last night's Monday Night Raw at 347-215-8486, 347-215-8486, if you'd like to get in on the conversation. Of course, as always, you can hit us up in our chat room. We'll take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. Before we get started with Monday Night Raw, a situation occurred at a house show that we need to talk about with Jeff Hardy. And apparently Jeff Hardy was sent home off the road after what they described as him having a rough night. I have watched the footage, fan footage that was on the internet. And basically Jeff Hardy looked very sluggish in his match. He wasn't doing all that much. He was just kind of taking the abuse. He seemed a little out of it. And then he rolled out of the ring and literally just jumped the barricade and just started walking around among the fans. He did not come back to celebrate the victory. He was having a six-man tag team match with Drew McIntyre and against the Usos and Roman Reigns. And he didn't even come back to celebrate with his team. This does not look good. I'm going to be very honest with you. Given the history of Jeff Hardy, this does not look good. And I know that there are a lot of Jeff Hardy fans out there, and in some discussion groups I was in, people are trying to defend him. But listen, if, and I do say if, this has anything to do with alcohol or drugs, he has to go. Now, I mentioned this yesterday, and people were saying, well, do you feel that way about Jimmy Uso? Jimmy Uso driving drunk? And listen, here's why it's different. When you're outside the ring, what you do, if it's illegal, such as driving drunk or being driving high under the influence of some kind of narcotic or whatever, that is a matter for the police. They catch you and you're arrested. Then it may go back to your employer to decide whether they want to keep you or not. But you're breaking the law on your own time. When you are drunk in a ring, that is not the same thing. You're not really breaking the law. You're in a building. And you're drinking. So you're drinking on the job. Let's just break this down to its bare elements. If you worked at, let's say, Walmart, and you came to work drunk, you're not going to be arrested. You are going to be fired. You're definitely going to be fired. Now, if outside on your day off, you caught a drunk driving charge, you probably wouldn't be fired. You didn't do it at work, and it didn't necessarily, unless it affects your ability to get to work, it really doesn't affect your job performance. So they wouldn't really, I mean, they don't have any say over your personal life when you're not at your job. Jeff Hardy was at his job. Big difference. Now, I'm not condoning what Jimmy Uso did. It's outrageous to drive drunk. You could kill someone. Kill someone in the ring, too, by the way. And this is not the first nor the second time. It's not even the third time. Because, you see, that match he had with Sting, where Sting basically just gave up on him. The night before that match, myself and Todd, or one of our panelists here, sat in the Mid-Hudson Civic Center in Poughkeepsie and watched a very drunk Jeff Hardy in the ring. I was the night before the Sting incident. Wasn't on television, but you could tell he was out of his mind. You can't have this. I don't care who you are. You can't have this. And so for the people who said, do you feel that way about Jimmy Uso? Yes, I do. If Jimmy Uso shows up in that ring drunk, Jimmy Uso shows up in that ring high, can't manage to stumble through his match, is disoriented, jumps the barricade because he doesn't even know what to do next except walk away, yes, he needs to go. So that's the answer to your question. But to answer the question of should Jimmy Uso and fire from driving cards, well, that's the thought. He did not do that while he was in the ring. He did not do that while he was at work. So that's arbitrary. It's a totally different situation. But Mike, this does not look good. Now, people aren't saying he was drunk or people aren't saying he was high, but Matt Hardy has tweeted, my brother, you know, I wish him well. If he wants to tell a story, he can tell a story. It's not my story to tell. It does not sound good.
Right. It doesn't sound good when your brother is saying that. And the fact of the matter is he's had these problems before. I mean, this isn't an end gimmick thing, you know, like the APA was, you know. The APA, you would routinely see them drinking a beer or sitting at a poker table drinking a beer. That's an end gimmick thing. We know what Jeff Hardy has had happen to him. And we know his history, you know. And this isn't, like you say, this isn't Jimmy Uso, who I don't want to say is a functioning alcoholic, but it hasn't yet affected his problems. Hasn't yet affected his work rate, like Jeff Hardy has been known to do.
Right. And there's also no evidence that he's ever gotten into that ring while he was drunk. What you do on your own time, you know, it's not good for the company, and it's not good for you. And if the company chooses to fire you based upon a morals clause saying, well, if you got arrested for drunk driving, we don't want you to be in our federation, fair enough. But at the same time, the WWE has always released statements saying what these performers do on their own time, they're responsible for. It has nothing to do with us. But what they do on our time, you are responsible for. In other words, if Jeff Hardy was in that ring drunk or high, someone let him go in that ring drunk or high. And I can't for the life of me imagine who did that. And if they did, and he hurt himself severely or someone else severely, guess who's responsible? Now, as horrible as it sounds, if Jeff Hardy's out or Jimmy Uso's out driving drunk and he smacks into somebody and hurts them, guess who's responsible? Jimmy Uso, not Vince McMahon. That's where the difference is. Doesn't look good for Jeff Hardy, Todd. It's a shame, but it looks like it's very, very likely he fell off the wagon.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, this like that. I remember that night we went to that Impact Wrestling. At the time, it was at the TNA house show when Jeff Hardy wrestled. Like you said, there was something wrong that night, and the next night he wrestled Sting. Like there's still something wrong that night with him. Now, over the weekend, same thing. He relapsed.
That's what it looks like, unfortunately. We can hope that it was something else. We can hope that he felt like he was injured or he got concussed or, I mean, not that that's a good thing, but at least it's not his fault. And he rolled out and was disoriented. But listening to what Matt had to say, I don't think Matt thinks that, and I don't think anybody else thinks that. Anyway, let's get on to Raw. We'll wish him the best. I mean, I don't know what's going to happen. But I do know this. If that does turn out to be drug or alcohol related, he has to go. Anyway, Raw starts out with a steel cage match. How about that? Now, Raw's pulling out all the stops here, folks. How many championship matches were last night on Raw? Damian Priest defended his title. Becky Lynch defended her title. Big E defended his title in a steel cage. There was a tournament for the tag team titles. They're pulling out all the stops. Unfortunately, their storylines are exactly the same. We'll get to that in a minute. Anyway, a pretty good steel cage match. We knew, of course, that Kevin Owens wasn't going to win inside the steel cage, but it was going to be interesting to see exactly what happened, and they did swerve us a little because we knew that Seth Rollins was going to interfere. We obviously knew that was coming. I didn't necessarily know Bobby Lashley was going to get involved. Bobby Lashley basically comes in and decimates all three of them. And from what I see, I'm imagining this is going to lead to a fatal four-way rather than a triple threat. That's my gut feeling is telling me that they are going to change that next week. You know, it's a good way to start out Raw. I can't say anything bad about it, Mike. I just, you know, when they announced it was Seth Rollins against Big E, I thought this is going to be really super good. And then they announced, well, Kevin Owens is in it. And I'm like, nah, it's going to be muddied up now. And now if they announced Bobby Lashley's in it, it's a four-way, it's going to be even more muddied up. I think I just would have preferred a one-on-one, but at the same time, I mean, you do have your four best guys in there.
Right. And look, this was a good way to get Bobby to reintroduce Bobby. Bobby Lashley's been off of TV for how long now? You know,
quite a while.
And we know that right now, and we saw later on in the show that MVP's back. So,
right.
So this is a good way to bring not only Bobby Lashley back, but MVP back as well.
Yeah, I didn't have a problem with it. I, you know, the Fatal 4-Way, if it turns out to be that way, well, we'll see. We'll see where that goes. If that is a Fatal 4-Way, Todd, I'm assuming Bobby Lashley's going to take the belt back because I don't know why you'd interject him just to have him lose. Of course, you know, he doesn't have to be pinned, but it just wouldn't make that much sense to interject him unless you do plan on putting the belt back around him.
Well, you're absolutely right, Dale. Like you said, when Bobby Lashley made his return last night to television, those promos we saw like a week or two ago, more like face promos when he returned.
They were, but then he came right back this week and sort of played the heel, so I don't know. We'll see where that's going. Next up, we had Queen Zelina, which I can't take this accent. I can't take this UK English accent. I don't know why she's doing this. You know, I'm surprised social justice warriors aren't saying you're stealing someone's nationality. That's not what you know. You shouldn't talk like that if you're not really English. That's wrong. You know, this time I might back him up because it's just annoying. It's just annoying. Number one, she doesn't do it that well. And number two, everybody knows she doesn't talk like that. And by the way, not every queen in the world was English. There were Spanish queens. So I really don't know why she's doing it. Nikki Ash, who had done nothing since they lost the tag team belt, is continuing to do nothing, and we can very clearly see where this story is going. Nikki's going to get fed up with losing. She's going to go back to her other character, and she's probably going to turn heel, flip heel on Rhea Ripley. The problem with the WWE is all of their storylines are exactly the same. When is Rhea Ripley and Nikki Ash going to break up? When is AJ Styles and Almost going to break up? When is RK-Bro going to break up? When are Otis and Chad Gable going to break up? When are Dominic Mysterio and Rey Mysterio going to break up? It's all the same story. And that gets really frustrating. You'd think they could come up with something better. But it's just repeat, repeat, repeat. So Nikki Ash losing, it's quite obvious. Backstage, she's momentarily consoled by a fan who somehow managed to get backstage. I don't know. I've never been a fan that just wandered backstage, but apparently you can. And she just wanders into the building and says, can I have your autograph? And when Nikki starts to comply, she says, oh, no, I didn't mean you. And then you see that Jerry Lawler is there. Well, this spot makes no sense for a couple of reasons. Number one, if you're a fan, you'd ask all three of them for an autograph. They're there. Number two, if you are a fan, and very clearly someone's ready to give you their autograph, you don't say, I don't want yours. So I'm not sure I like this. It was kind of hokey. And, Mike, the stories are just redundant. It's the same story.
Right, and that's the thing. And look, we're talking about, yeah, I don't like Queen Zelina's thing. And, look, you've had Scottish queens, Mary Queen of Scots, you know. Queen of Scots, you know, that type of stuff. You've had non-British queens.
Plenty of Spanish queens. Sure.
Yep. No, I'm talking to Mary Queen of Scots.
Yeah.
You know,
you've had,
that type
Yeah, you've had Scotland had queens. England had queens. Spain had queens. Many, many countries had queens.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, I would have bought it more if it's hell, Nikki Ash or even Doudrop. In fact, we'll get around to Doudrop because I want to see something happening with Doudrop, but that we'll get around to that. But yeah, this is we see it's like lather, rinse, repeat with the WWE.
Man, it really is. Every tag team just about is when are they going to break up? And it's just, God, that's just such lazy writing. It's just such lazy writing. Anyway, obviously Nikki takes the pinfall. Queen Zelina wins. It is what it is. I'm not into the Queen Zelina thing. I'm not even into this Nikki Ash, Rhea Ripley thing. Street Profits and AJ Styles and Almos. Now, backstage, we see Randy Orton and Matt Riddle, and Riddle's trying to get him to wear an old WWE announcer's jacket. He finally does. They're doing this hokey thing with we're going to be announcers for this bronament or whatever the hell it is to decide who the number one contenders are. Street Profits versus AJ and Almos. Now, Almos did a terrible job, and I'll tell you why he did a terrible job. The idea behind this was Almos got so furious from being slapped that he tagged himself in when AJ Styles is about to win and then just forgets, oh, I'm outside the ring, even though the referee's clearly counting. Now, if you were going to do this spot where Almos went into a rage, should have done it instantly when he got slapped and just be disqualified instead of counted out. AJ's in the ring, Almos gets slapped, Almos is like, oh yeah, and climbs in the ring and just goes apeshit crazy, right? Because at least that makes him look like, well, man, if you piss him off, he'll go nuts on you. This just makes him look like an idiot. He don't hear the count. So I think you handled that totally wrong. I think they handled it totally wrong. And I think I'm wrong when I say that it might be Almost who's the babyface in this, because AJ was kind of saying, look, dude, you got to listen to me. That's the way this team works. You got to listen to me. And then Almost seemed to be the jackass. He's the one who lost the match, and he still stormed out. Now, AJ later on seems like he's back to being the heel AJ when he's talking to Matt Riddle. Before that moment, I said to myself, maybe AJ is going to flip back to being a face. Maybe it is going to be AJ face character against Almost heel. I don't know. Either way, the problem with the WWE and the tag team division, other than the Street Profits, is virtually every tag team you have, Street Profits and the Dirty Dogs are the only two, virtually every team you have is on the verge of breaking up, Todd, so it's kind of weird.
You're absolutely right there, like you said, about this thing with the breakup, so the possibility of breaking tag teams up, for one, with Almos and AJ Styles. It must be the other way around. AJ Styles should have walked out on Almos as the heel and get booed for it.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. I don't know where this is going, Mike, but it's obviously leading to AJ Styles versus Almos at some point.
Yeah, it is, and that's gonna. We'll see what happens with that. And look, it's not just that they're breaking up teams, you know, other than the Street Profits. It's the teams that shouldn't be broken up. They've so minimized them that it's not even funny. I mean, you've got Cedric and what's his name, and not only have they been losing as a tag team, but Cedric's lost a couple of matches singularly, so they're minimizing that tag team.
You're right. You're right. Anyway, we then get to a very interesting part of the show, don't we? We get to Miz TV. And I swear to God, somebody must have been listening to the show last week. Because we very clearly said what The Miz should say. Anybody listening to this, go back and listen to last week's show when we said what The Miz should have said was, The reason you're upset is because while I was a big, I came in here from television, and nobody thought I was a wrestler. They thought I was some TV personality, and I couldn't hack it, and I was kicked out of the dressing room, and I was picked on, and I was told I was never going to cut it, and I ended up in a lot better shape than you. I'm still going strong. That's exactly what The Miz said. I mean, that is just about word for word what The Miz said. And when he started in on this diatribe and said, remember when I was kicked out of the locker, I said, holy mackerel. That is verbatim what we said he should have been saying. And he even mentioned, you know, Edge, your best years are behind you. You're hobbling around. You're not like me. My finest years are ahead of me. And I'm saying, man. Man, oh, man. It was a much, much better promo this week, Mike, and, man, they took the words right out of our mouth.
You know something? We know who our favorite wrestler is in the WWE right now, and it is, and it has been for a long time, Angel Garza. And we know that Angel Garza kind of listens to this show at times. Maybe right. He had somebody listen to the show last week, you know, they heard us say that, and they took it word for word from what we were saying, you know. Maybe that happened. I don't know. You never know.
I don't know but it's a damn funny coincidence. That it's, I mean, it's if they had just touched on a couple of things, I would have said, well, you know. But, I mean, this was almost word for word. With The Miz saying, you guys treated me like garbage when I first came in here. You told me I wasn't going to amount to anything. You treated me like a reality star. You kicked me out of the dressing rooms. You didn't do squat for me. And now you want to come out and sing my praises. Well, that's because you're old and washed up. And you look at me now and you realize I'm better than you. I turned out better than you. The guy you said wasn't a wrestler turned out better than you. And holy mackerel. My head almost exploded, Todd, because I was like, geez, man, I think they owe us a pizza.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, they went for word for word in that promo last night with Edge and The Miz. Actually, it was not a bad promo. It was one of the better ones I saw from last week. Last week was this terrible.
Last week wasn't too good. And, Mike, to have them come back and do it again, have a do-over, and do it pretty much the way they did it, seemed odd, right?
Right. There have been times that over the past, say, year and a half or 2 years, that we've said what they need here is a reset, right? Basically,
yep.
That's what they did. They reset it. They pressed the reset button, you know, and I mean, it was a good idea to do that because, look, now I am interested in seeing this match.
Right. Me too. Because now it's about something different. See, before it was just about The Miz being arrogant or whatever. Now it's about The Miz saying, I've come to a point in my career where I know I'm good. And you all know I'm good. You're even admitting I'm good. But that's not what you did when I got here. You shit all over me and told me I didn't belong. Well, here I am, and I'm better than you now. And Edge saying, yeah, well, listen, that happened, but then who was the guy who told you, you know, you do have something. Yeah, it's a very interesting dichotomy now. And I'm just, you know, I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, they definitely listened to the show and they definitely took our idea. But man, oh, man. Talk about great minds think alike then, because, wow, it wasn't just, it was a little similar. It was almost word for word. Almost word for word. Anyway, what do we get up next? We get Damian Priest. And, you know, I'm so confused about these titles. I said it was the Intercontinental title. It's actually the U.S. title. Damian Priest defeats Robert Roode. Tell you why. Number one, Robert Roode is still a really good wrestler, and he showed it. Number two, we didn't see the crazy, I'm going to go nuts and beat people with a chair, Damian Priest. I like this Damian Priest a lot better. It was not a good idea what you were doing. And once again, what did they do? We said, just go back to the old way, and oh, this week he's back to the old way. and it's much better. Nobody wants to see him bug his eyes out like Ricky Ricardo and then chase somebody around with a chair and pretend he's lost his mind. It doesn't work. It's silly. This worked. This was a good wrestling match. And even though we all know Dolph Ziggler's not going to win the U.S. title, that would be a great match. So I'm okay with this, Mike, and I think, once again, they kind of took our advice a little bit.
Yeah, I'm okay with it as well, especially if it kind of, because you know what's going to happen probably somewhere down the line. They're going to break the Dirty Dogs up, and I wouldn't be at all adverse to seeing a Robert Roode Dolph Ziggler feud
right
at some point.
They may as well. They're breaking up every other tag team, Mike, so they might as well throw that in the mix and say, let's do it too. Anyway, okay, we get to Bianca Belair and Doudrop. Now, I'm not 100% sure exactly what happened here, so let me walk through this. I know the ending was the way the ending was supposed to be, but I'm not 100% sure that it wasn't called somewhere on the fly, because why would you just walk out? And she did it right after Bianca Belair failed to lift her up properly for that move. And I'm thinking to myself, is it remotely possible, supposed to hit her with it, couldn't balance her, they decided I'm not going to do it again, because if I couldn't do it the first time, I can't do it now, and I don't want to drop you wrong. And she just said, well, we'll just do it this way. Because that seemed like a really odd way to end that match. Really odd. Now, maybe they did it on purpose, because maybe they didn't want to have her pinned until maybe they're going to do something at day one or something. But right after that spot, it just seemed odd. Now, Doudrop was trying to help her by balancing herself on the ropes. I don't know if you noticed that, but Doudrop was kind of holding on the ropes and wait until Bianca Belair got her fully balanced before she let go of the ropes. So that would give her a little bit more leverage, Todd, but she still really couldn't do it. And when she dropped her, then right after that, Bianca Belair moved away and Doudrop just slid out and walked away.
I think you're absolutely right there. Like you said, another one got intentionally counted out last night too. And like you said, looks like Bianca Belair couldn't hold her up no more than a second.
Yeah, now I don't know whether that was intentional and they were trying to say that Bianca Belair's best move she's not going to be able to do to Doudrop, possibly, because she picked up Otis. So if she can pick up Otis, I'm pretty sure she could pick up Doudrop, but maybe that was them saying, oh, look, she can't do it, so in future matches, she's not going to be able to hit her finisher, and then she eventually will. But there's a reverse side to that, and the reverse side is maybe she was supposed to hit it, blew it, told Doudrop, I can't pick you, I'm not going to try it again, and they had to call an audible. I'm not sure what happened here, Mike. The ending seemed a little weird.
The ending did seem a little weird, and the only thing I can say is that, you know, what's her big deal? I'm the strongest, right?
Right, yep.
Well, if you're the strongest and you can't get a 220-pound woman, you know, up on your shoulder, when we obviously saw her get a 330-pound man
right
on her shoulder.
Right.
You know, so obviously the whole balance thing is good. And frankly, I'm willing to excuse the walkout knowing what I know now. And the fact of the matter is I don't like the Doudrop name. I don't like it. I don't like the gimmick. I'd rather see her go back to Piper Niven or Viper Niven.
Yeah, me
know?
Too. Yeah, me too. The Doudrop thing was almost supposed to be an embarrassing name that was given to her to kind of humiliate her. And she kept it, which is really, really weird. I thought that once she went out on her own, she'd say, you know, this Doudrop thing is over, and my name is Piper Niven or whatever, and that would have been much better. Would have been much better. I don't know what happened in the match. It might have went exactly the way it's supposed to go. I mean, the chances are very high that that's exactly how it was booked. But even if that was exactly how it was booked, the last couple minutes of that match felt odd. It felt like it wasn't booked that way. It felt like either Piper Niven said, I'm not going to let her pick me up again because she's going to drop me, or Bianca Belair clearly told her, I'm not doing it again because I don't feel I can get you. And they called an audible, or that's the way it went. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what happens in the future with that. Backstage, we got Vince McMahon, and I guess we're going to do this Austin Theory thing right along here now. Austin Theory's back. Here's the reason I'm having a little problem with this. Because it's making Vince McMahon look weird. I like when Vince McMahon looks like he's a tyrant. I like when Vince McMahon looks like he is exerting his authority and he is, toying with the wrestlers. But this took on a weird feel to me. Now, maybe it's just me. And I don't want anybody to say, you're being homophobic, because I'm not being homophobic. But this thing took on a weird sort of thing, because at one point he tells him he's going to have a title match, and they say, surprise, that's not true, you're not going to have a match. You're going to have to impress me some other way. And what is Austin Theory's first idea of how to impress Vince McMahon? He unzips his vest and starts doing jumping jacks in front of him while Vince McMahon watches him. And he goes, I can do this all day. And then when Vince McMahon tells him, no, that's not what I had in mind. You're going to have to use your brain. You're going to have to find another way to impress me. Vince McMahon just stares at him in a weird way. And there's this weird vibe that they're giving off that I don't like. Now, it has nothing to do with being homophobic. If they want to have a homosexual character, go for it. But it shouldn't be Vince McMahon. And it probably shouldn't be Austin Theory either. And it sure as hell shouldn't be a 78-year-old man and a 25-year-old. That's my problem. Hell, when you had Billy and Chucky and you had all these other bets, fine. I don't care. You want to have that type of character, even if they aren't really that way, or even if they are. It doesn't bother me. It bothers me when it seems lewd. It bothers me when it seems really sleazy. And this it's starting to have that feel for me. Vince McMahon, God bless him. I'm sure that's not the way he intended it. But if you watch that segment with Vince McMahon, the way he's staring at Austin Theory, and I don't know, Mike. It just gave me a weird, weird vibe. I didn't care for it much.
Yeah, I didn't care for it much either. And look, we know some of the things he's done in terms of the sexual type things that he's done, including having what's-her-name crawl in front of him and crawl up to him like a doll, you know?
Right, yep.
And, you know, that type of stuff. Now, you bought that, and frankly, you would have bought if he had had her, unzip her vest and do jumping jacks, right? You would have bought that.
Yeah.
You know, because that's how he was playing his character at the time. And in his own personal life, at that point in time, there were always these rumors about him having affairs while he was, as he was having his affairs again, while he was still married, while he's married to Linda, you know? So.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point, but go ahead.
Yeah, so. But like I said, this is just a weird thing. I don't know where they're going with it. I mean, at one point we thought it was him storyline-wise saying, well, you're going to be the next guy to run this company or something like that or whatever, you know. And we thought that's where this was going, but it appears that's not where this is going anymore.
No, and let me just address that because you made a really good point. Would I be as skeeved out if that was a girl doing it? Well, yes now. See, here's the thing. When he was doing that with Trish Stratus, it was 15, 20 years ago. He was 15, 20 years younger. just seeing Vince McMahon in this position, I don't know. It's just weird. And yes, if he had some girl come in and do the same thing, I'd say that's not good. It's not good. Not because I think there should be any limits on what you're doing. See what the point is. Going anywhere with that, so what's the point? If you said, well, Vince McMahon is going to, you know, supposedly have an affair with fill-in-the-blank girl or guy or whatever you're going to do, and this is going to lead to, okay, well, then the angle is the angle and whatever. But that's not what's going to happen. So I don't even know why you're doing this. I don't know why you're giving off this vibe, because it's going nowhere. Anyway, we get Finn Balor versus T-Bar. Gee, I wonder who's going to win. Finn Balor has lost I don't know how many times in a row. And they need to build back Finn Balor up, and T-Bar can't beat anybody. So we all knew what was going to happen. The big surprise here, of course, is that he's jumped by Austin Theory afterwards, and that's supposed to be the Vince McMahon being impressed moment, I suppose. Takes a selfie with him and everything. I think you better figure out where this angle's going. Now, where I thought this angle was going is that Vince McMahon was going to say, I see myself in you as a younger man, and I would like to see you be the champion. I would like to see you be the face of this company and get behind him in an unfair advantage sort of way. That's where I thought this was going. I don't know where this is going now. I mean, here's what I don't want to see. I don't want to see Vince McMahon sitting at a desk eyeing Austin Theory like he was a cheeseburger while Austin Theory is gyrating. I don't want to see it. I don't think anybody else wants to see it. So you're going to have to figure out where this is going. And my assumption is what I said before is correct, that he somehow sees himself in Austin Theory as a younger man, and he wants to vicariously live through Austin Theory and have Austin Theory reach the top, because he's molding him to be the champion. If that's where this is going, then you never should have had him face Big E to begin with. Whether he lost due to distraction or not, this should have been an ongoing thing leading up to facing Big E. And if Lashley gets a hold of the title again, well, then who wants to see Lashley against Austin Theory? Nobody. It's just two heels fighting. It's not going to work. So I'm not sure, Todd, where this is going, but it has somewhat of a creepy feel at times.
Well, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, it does feel like a little creepy there with this angle. And has that, like, that little – it was just – this didn't feel right with me with this angle to see this.
No, it's a little weird. I hope they can straighten it out, because I think they've lost the focus of it, and that's a shame, because I really like Austin Theory. I think he could be one of the top heels in the company. I really do. Anyway, the bro-nament continues with Rey and Dominic Mysterio against the Alpha Academy. I don't know why you still have the Alpha Academy in existence. How in the world could Otis be so stupid as to take advice from a guy who says, I'm going to show you the way to succeed, when he never, ever wins? Ever. Now, you could see Otis doing it if Otis was losing. See, I thought where this was going to go is this. Thought that Chad Gable was going to tell Otis to toughen up and be mean, and Otis don't know how to be mean. Otis is childlike and innocent and fun-loving and lovable, and he tries, but because he's trying to do something he can't do, he keeps losing. And Chad Gable keeps saying, oh, you're lost, I'll show you how it's done, and then Chad Gable wins. And Otis gets more and more frustrated behind the fact that he's winning, I'm losing, I can't do what he does for some reason, I can't figure it out, I don't have that mean streak in me, and then one day he does. Then one day he snaps and goes apeshit crazy. And Chad Gable says, this is the guy I wanted. Now I got the Otis I want. That's where I thought this angle was going. Instead, I don't know why Otis would follow a guy, Mike, that never, ever, ever wins a match, ever.
Right. And think about it this way. We got on the WWE cutting the whole Otis Mandy Rose thing short, right? And look at where Mandy Rose is now. You know,
right.
She's a champion of NXT, and she's running with a group that's also champions. So,
yep.
In other words, whatever he was trying to teach Otis, seems like Mandy Rose has used those lessons. I mean, what they're having her do is a heel gimmick, right?
Right.
Down
yep.
in NXT, and well. And that was I think they were trying to do that with Otis, but again, this is another one of these things where people, for some reason, still want to cheer Otis.
Yeah, that's going to be very hard, and that's why I said I thought we were going to get to that point where people were going to say, poor Otis, he can't win because he's trying to be mean and he can't be mean. And you could even have the announcer say that. You could have the face announcer say, look, you know why Chad Gable's not helping Otis. Chad Gable's ruining Otis because he's trying to change him into something he's not. Otis is not a mean, violent guy. And Chad Gable's trying to make him a mean, violent guy, and that's why he's losing. And, of course, the heel announcers could say he's losing because he won't listen. If he'd just do what Chad Gable said, he wouldn't be losing. What Otis really is a loser. He was a loser before Chad Gable. He's a loser after Chad Gable. He's just a loser. And then one day, whatever it happens to be, put them in a match where there's three teams or something, or four teams, and just have them snap. And literally just have bodies laying all over the place. And Chad Gable saying, that's the Otis. And then everybody could say, do you see what that man just did? He devastated the tag team division. He single-handedly devastated the tag team division. He's a monster. Chad Gable succeeded. He brought the monster out of Otis, and this is bad news for everybody. That would be cool, because then you'd say, well, Chad Gable accomplished exactly what he set out to accomplish. Chad Gable's not doing anything. And why Otis would follow him is beyond me. He does not win. So it seems a little silly. I don't like it. We talked about Finn Balor and T-Bar, no big deal. We get to Becky Lynch and Liv Morgan. I'm going to say something that's going to probably be unpopular. Everybody's on this Liv Morgan train. Everybody's saying, oh, Liv Morgan is so wonderful. She's so great. She's so fantastic. Liv Morgan has not changed at all. Liv Morgan has not gotten better. She's not gotten worse. She's exactly the same as she was with the Riot Squad. She's doing exactly the same moves. And I got a newsflash. If you put Liv Morgan into the men's division as a man and he wrestled like that, you'd say slow, awkward, lazy. But because it's in the women's division, all of a sudden it's, oh, wonderful, she's great. No, she's not. No, she's not. She's not ready to be the champion. She's not a third of what Becky Lynch is. Not now. Maybe she will be. But she's not right now. She hits a couple of moves, and most of those moves don't even look like they hurt. And she just doesn't impress me that much. She when she was in a tag team with the Riot Squad, the thing she did, I said, it was okay. She's okay. And she's still okay. She's not a bad wrestler. She's not a championship wrestler. Not right now. So everybody's on the Liv Morgan train saying, she's so wonderful. She's going to, nah, it's just flavor of the week. You're being facetious because if you watch her very carefully, she's not that great. She's adequate is a good way to put it. She's adequate. She has a good look. And she's adequate. That's it. There are times when she's very slow. There are times when her moves look really, really pre-planned, and she runs into them very slowly and very carefully. She still looks like she's trying to feel her way through sometimes a match instead of just fight. I challenge you to watch Liv Morgan fight and then watch like Seth Rollins and go at it with Kevin Owens, and you'll see what I mean. There's a very big difference with how smooth the transitions are and how physical it is, and it's not there. Now, Becky Lynch can hold her own in that category, and so can Charlotte Flair, and so can Nikki Ash, and so can Asuka, and several women. Right now, Liv Morgan cannot. I don't care what anybody says. You can just watch them. All you got to do is watch very carefully, and you'll see. So I don't think she's ready for it. Now, she lost the match due to Becky Lynch holding on the rope, same thing she did with Charlotte Flair. There's a reason they're doing this. I suspect that she might win the belt. I suspect that she might hold the ropes and do exactly what Becky Lynch has done two times in a row and kind of cheat Becky Lynch with her own move. But I hope not, Mike, because I honestly don't think she's ready for that.
I don't think she's ready either. And the fact of the matter is, they've got a bigger problem than that. That what Becky Lynch did was an obvious heel move, and the fans still cheered her. That's the big problem there.
Yeah, I know. Well, that is a big problem. And we've discussed that on the show, and I just for the life of me have no idea why the WWE doesn't see this and say, yeah, we're going to have the flipper. I know the situation. I know that Becky Lynch said, well, Seth is a heel. It makes no sense for me to be a face. And Seth doesn't want to turn face, I guess. So, but you're hurting your own cause. You've got to, at some point, realize the fans want to cheer Becky Lynch. See, Becky Lynch has sort of become like a Stone Cold Steve Austin, in the sense that they don't need her to be squeaky clean. So if she does a little cheating or whatever, like, so what? That's her personality. They don't want her to be squeaky clean. I did think it was funny. The little girl was really upset that Becky Lynch won, and they showed the little girl scowling in the audience, which was pretty funny. But aside from that, a lot of people ain't buying into this. Mike, you're absolutely right. So anyway, we're going to give our ratings on the show, and then we are going to talk a little bit about the NXT War Games that we did not get a chance to talk about. My problem with this show is this. There were a couple of good matches. They certainly piqued my interest a little bit at day one, and probably will continue to pique my interest a little more, hopefully anyway. But all your storylines are redundant. They're the same exact storyline, just rehashed to a different team or a different person. And it's getting old. It's getting really old. I don't really feel like there's a really good ongoing storyline for any of these characters, other than just when will somebody turn on somebody. And I think that this four-way thing that could happen, you're clearly showing who you want to be your four top guys. And then after that, there's a huge fall off. It's great when you have, like, some A-listers and then some, like, B-plus players. And then you have a couple of maybe B-minus and C-plus players. It's like A, D. And that's the problem. You got to fill in the blanks in there a little bit. You got to have some guys that are right on the cusp of they could be, you know, the A guys real soon. And I don't see them. So I'm going to give this a C minus. I thought it was decent, but I don't think it was great, Mike.
Yeah, I got to give it the same thing. And look, you know, to me, I'll say this about Liv Morgan. She could be at some point, a good transitional champion. You know, if you don't want, if you want somebody to just hold it for a short amount of time, or she could fill the role maybe of a Big E at some point where she's good, but you know somebody's going to eventually beat her. But she's not a Becky Lynch, a Nikki Ash. Even to some extent, I see a lot of potential in Doudrop. You know?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Me too. But I think she's got to be different. You know, I just wish Doudrop had won the Queen of the Ring. Because I think she could have pulled it off and said, I'm going back to being, my old self. I'm dropping the Doudrop name. I'm going back to Piper Niven. So it would be Queen Piper or Queen Niven or whatever you're going to do. She already has the British accent or whatever it is. And I just think it would have been cool. I just don't think this is helping Zelina Vega. I don't see it. I don't know. She's getting TV time and she's getting wins, but her character's not interesting. Todd, where are you standing on this show?
I gotta give it a C-2, and this wasn't a good show for me this week on Monday Night Raw.
I mean, some of it, I like the steel cage match and I like the last match, but the idea of the tournament is okay. But what we're seeing now, again, the storylines are just too redundant. Over and over again, it's the same thing. And I think they got to really start fleshing out better storylines or different ones for each character instead of just saying every character's the same. When is my partner or my friend going to turn on me? We don't need that. Not every time, not every team, not every athlete. And it's almost verbatim every one. So we'll see where the WWE goes with this. Hopefully this day one is like wipe the slate clean and start fresh. Let's hope so. As far as NXT TakeOver, War Games goes, my problem with it is still the same problem that I said before. I told you, you're likely to get some good matches, and the men's war game match was excellent. The women's war game match was good. But no one really cared. That's the problem. You can have these athletes, and they can put on a great performance, and they did. But if the fans don't really care about that win and loss, if the fans aren't really totally into, we want this team to win, and there's a lot of times I notice in NXT where the wrong guys are getting rooted for. The heels are being cheered. The faces are being booed. Now, the men's war game match didn't have that. The men's war game match, everybody was solidly behind the faces, but I don't think they cared that much whether they won or lost. And if this is Johnny Gargano's last sort of, I think he has one more match or something next week, and I'm assuming by his social media saying it's been a great run and everything, that he's not coming back. So it seems a little bittersweet. I think this was probably the worst War Games, Mike, not necessarily because of the matches, but because my interest in who wins and loses wasn't very high.
Yeah. Well, let me go back to the first, not the first one, but the one that had all four of the Undisputed Era in it. That was a big match because we wanted to see the good guys because they made the Undisputed Era look so strong. We want to see the good guys absolutely kill the Undisputed Era, absolutely kill them. And basically, that's kind of what happened, but it was a big match, and it had a big match feel.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the thing. These war games didn't have a big match feel to me, I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. You know, maybe hardcore NXT fans it did, but I just think your average fan sat there and watched it and said, good matches, but I'm not into who wins or loses. What do you think, Todd?
You're absolutely right there. Like you said, it just didn't have that feel of the War Games. I remember the original War Games. They had the roof on the ring with the cage. Now this looks like a regular steel cage match you see in War Games now.
Yeah, exactly. That's true too. Yeah, that's very true. I don't know. Well, we'll see. I think NXT is still trying to find their personality or who they are. This 2.0 has kind of shook them up, and it seems a little odd, Mike. And I think they're still trying to work out the bugs and figure out where they want to go.
I think so, too. And the fact of the matter is they probably should never have taken it away from Triple H, you know. And maybe not. He could have gotten the ratings up. Maybe not. I don't know. But they probably should have not taken it away from Triple H to the point of, you know, what they did. That he has nothing to do with it now. In fact, he has very little to do with the WWE right now, because he's not booking anything. He's not doing anything. So I mean, if you're gonna take everything away from him, that's not good. And this was right. His baby.
Yeah, it really was. you know, NXT, you could say they're going through growing pains, but they've been around too long to really be going through growing pains. They're going through an identity crisis. That's the best way to put it. They think they know what they want, and then they're like, eh, maybe that's not what we want, and they're not really sure. They're going to probably lose Johnny Gargano, and I think they're losing more guys. I don't know where Kyle is going. Is he going or staying? I don't know. I know his contract is up pretty soon. Kyle Riley. If they lose those two guys, those are sort of NXT favorites to a certain extent. You know, the old NXT fans were big Gargano fans, big O'Reilly fans. Tommaso Ciampa is still there, but and you know, he's kind of been minimized to a certain extent, Mike. So they're going to have to do a lot of hard work to get these new guys to the level where these fans think of them the same way as they think of those guys.
You know, I make a big deal about them losing Candice LeRae, but they still got enough women that are still there that can compensate for them losing Candice LeRae. But if they lose Kyle O'Reilly, and then they lose Roderick Strong. I mean, the rumor has always been that O'Reilly and Strong are going to go join their new their guys in AEW, which would be probably a good idea. And also the other rumor was that Roderick Strong had talked to the WWE and said, I kind of like to be a trainer, and who knows? Who knows how that's going to end up? Who knows how that's going to end up? They may end up hiring Roderick Strong as a trainer, you know? But I wouldn't at all be adverse to having them go over to AEW and reunite with the other two and having a new, you know, having that group or something like that group. I mean, get them a, get Adam Cole away from the, you know, those guys, and put him with his group. You know?
Yep. I agree with that. And one last thing we want to mention before we go is, because a couple of fans wrote me and said, what do you think of Tony Khan's latest claim that the Thanksgiving show was the most watched show because he found the DVR numbers, and the DVR numbers are very, very high, and that's why the ratings really don't matter all that much. Tony Khan needs to shut up. Because when the ratings are good, then the ratings matter to Tony Khan. They say, well, look at the demographic of these ratings. These ratings matter because the key demographic. Well, now you're saying ratings don't matter. Now you're saying, oh, well, you know, the DVR is responsible for whatever. Well, the DVR is responsible for WWE, too. So, I mean, there's just as many people who DVR Raw and SmackDown. So you can't go by that. And by the way, that doesn't really matter to the TV stations because the commercials don't get seen. The advertisers don't give a damn about that because if you DVR it or whatever, you fast forward through the commercials. 90% of the time, you fast forward through the commercials. So they ain't paying for people to DVR. They don't care about those numbers, your advertisers. Tony Khan can't keep splitting hairs. Tony Khan can't keep doing this. Well, in the demographic of people who wear green shirts on Tuesday and eat bologna for lunch, we're number one. You can't have that. Just do your show. Because it's getting silly. It's making you look like a horse's ass. Just stop already. However many people watched it. We all know that people DVR it. We all know that people watch the shows later, but that applies to all shows. So you can't just isolate yourself. I mean, Mike, he really does have to stop this because he's starting to actually be a detriment to the Federation.
Right, and the thing is what needs to happen is Cody and, you know, Jake Roberts and Arn Anderson and Tully Blanchard, people like that, need to pull him aside and say, I know you're the boss, I know you're paying our checks, but we've been at this longer than you have, and we know how things are supposed to go, and just shut the hell up, you know?
Absolutely. Just do it already. You know, just do your show. Don't worry about it. The ratings are what they are. You can't keep excusing it. What he's trying to say is we are growing our audience, but then we could do that for WWE too and say, well, that 2 million 3 means nothing because how many people DVR'd it, you know? You just can't have it. Anyway, folks, thanks for listening, and we'll see you on Friday.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Wrestle Chat Radio is a Savage Blade production.